is the first time I've ever been away from boarding school.
Oh, so that's a uniform. Oh, thank God. I thought you just had really bad taste.
The sisters taught us not to dress in a way that could tempt men to sin.
Well, let that be a lesson to you, dear. Never take fashion tips from a nun.
Mother Superior would never approve of that outfit.
Hey, opportunity only gives you knockers once.
And welcome to Piloting Error, the podcast about unaired, unloved, and unhinged pilots. I'm Joe Young, and with me, as always, is my great uncle Stuart. How you doing, Stuart?
Hello.
Very spooky. And joining us today, Miguel Myers, host of the podcast My Horror Confessional. How are you doing, Miguel?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I'm really excited for this. I've been preparing all week. Listen to Cassandra Peterson's autobiography.
That is amazing.
And watch the movie Mistress of the Dark. Watch the show a couple times. So I'm prepared to go deep down a well for this one.
You're way more prepared than either of us. Although I did watch the movie. And we will get into that.
I actually watched a couple of extra movies that are Elvira adjacent.
Nice.
So that's what we're talking about tonight. The 1993 Elvira pilot, The Elvira Show.
The Elvira Show, maybe the least creative title for something that we've covered on here. Other than, I don't know, what, Dog Police?
Dog Police. It's pretty hard to beat. Dog Police, that's a pretty good title for a show. Like, you've got my attention.
It's pretty good. It's very generic. The entire premise of the show is just, like, all wrapped right up in there.
First of all, I want to say, Cassandra Peters. Elvira is a national treasure. She's always reliably funny. She's always on point. She's very funny, very talented, and so are a lot of the people in this show. But I didn't really like this show. I didn't really like the premise.
Yeah. No.
I think you can tell that she has comedic chops, right? Because she was in The Groundlings. And so she has her timing down. There was a commercial cut, and both times it's breaking the fourth wall. That was a bit cheesy, and I didn't really like that. Overall, you know, I'm a horror dude. I love horror movies. I love all horror content. I consume it all. And so while it wasn't the best, I've seen a lot worse. And so I'm about like 50-50 on this.
I hated it. especially after watching the movie. There were maybe two moments that made me laugh out loud legitimately, but other than that, it was a slog.
I think the movie is kind of everything you want out of Elvira. Like, it's all there. This premise of her being like witches and having a witch family, I don't feel like we need it, you know? I feel like she's enough.
Yeah, I felt like the witch stuff definitely worked in the movie, though.
Is she a witch in the movie?
Yeah.
Yes, in Mistress of the Dark.
Man, I totally forgot that part.
Yeah, her uncle was like trying to steal that book that her mom left her, and she thought it was a recipe book, but it was really a book of incantations and spells and stuff.
Her uncle, played by one of the greatest character actors of all time, William Morgan Shepherd, just in fucking everything for the last like 70 years. One of the most iconic voices. He was in Star Trek The Next Generation, Stuart, from the episode The Schizoid Man as Dr. Ira Graves.
Women aren't people, they're women.
But he was also in Frasier as the head of the club that Frasier and Niles like fight to join.
Oh, right.
He's in a ton of stuff. He's you know him.
But my question is, she finds a magic book, but she's not like a supernatural witch like she is in this. In this, it seems she's basically a bewitched type witch. And that is somehow an explanation for her appearance and everything.
Stuart, I'm going to have to disagree with you. I'm coming at your head now.
Great, great.
Get his ass.
I've seen that movie like 5 times, so I didn't watch it for this. So I apologize.
No, but in the movie, she has a ring that was given to her by her mom. And so at the end of the movie, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, that came out in 1988. But
sorry, we're spoiling a 40-year-old movie.
She uses the ring at the end to give her powers.
Okay.
So I don't know if she's the witch or the ring is giving her the powers. Maybe it's allowing her to channel her powers. I don't know. But there is that witchy element to it.
So do you think this is a sequel to the movie?
It kind of feels like it a little bit.
It feels like they tried, but it was watered down.
Well, I think we should just get right into who is Elvira. Elvira is a character played by Cassandra Peterson. She was a member of the Groundlings, as we said, which is an improv school in LA.
Yep, she was good friends with Paul Reubens.
Podcast favorite, Paul Reubens.
That's right.
And in fact, they are extremely close and have frequently appeared together in and out of character, but for basically forever. There are a few Pee-wee's Playhouse actors that show up in this very show. Which is pretty cool.
Also, she was a collaborator of John Paragon.
Yes.
Who was a major co-writer of Pee-wee's Playhouse. And he also helped write Mistress of the Dark and also Movie Macabre, which was the show that she got her start on.
That's right. And his only two director credits are for the two Barbarian Brother movies.
Double Take and Twin Sitter.
I saw one of them. I don't remember which one it was, but we used to hold pre-pandemic in the before times. I used to hold movie nights here in my house and we showed one of those Barbarian movies. It's a people pleaser for sure. It's so fucking bad.
Well, I watched Twin Sitter as research for this.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
It's not only directed by John Paragon, it was also written by
him. And starring him as the Barbarian Brothers.
John Paragon, I'm really glad we get to talk about him because he is just such an interesting guy. Just go look at his filmography. This guy had a lot of fun.
Oh, wow. He was in Eating Raoul.
Yeah. Which connects right with the recent episode of your podcast, Miguel, The Chopping Mall.
Yes, exactly, because those two characters, Mary Warnoff and the bald dude with the beard, yeah, they were both in it from Eating Raoul. I've never seen Eating Raoul, so I don't know if it's good or not.
I haven't either.
It's fantastic. You should both watch it. It's one of those classic indie comedies. I think it even got picked up and put on Criterion Collection at some point. But it's very fun.
So Elvira, she was a late night horror host, which has a very long history in American television going back to the 1950s. Basically, local TV stations would play public domain horror movies at night, which were bookended at the commercial breaks with cheesy sketches by a costumed host. And there were dozens of these.
There were probably 100.
Mm-hmm. All throughout the country.
I grew up in Chicago and we had our own horror host. And his name was Svengoolie.
Yeah.
My name is Svengoolie, and for many years, I've hosted horror movies in the Midwest, usually in Chicago, which is close to my adopted hometown, Berwyn.
Berwyn.
Sounds like you know who he is, but he's cheesy and funny. He's literally throwing rubber chickens at people, and he's got the really vamp style makeup and all that. So I can't tell you how big he was in my life growing up in Chicago in the 90s. For me, it was like Michael Jordan and Bozo the Clown.
Yes.
And Svengoolie.
I'm a huge Bozo fan. I loved Bozo.
Yeah. I would be cleaning my room at night or just reading a book or something like that. And I would have Svengoolie on Saturday nights. And this was before SNCC came out.
Saturday night has arrived. And Saturday night belongs to SNCC.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Nickelodeon. So as soon as SNCC came out, I changed my allegiances over to SNCC.
The orange couch.
Were you a big Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yes, huge, huge, yeah.
Okay.
Every Saturday, because I was also a chubby little fucker, I would go to my local store, Adams Woods, on the corner on Fullerton Avenue, and I would get all my snacks and I would walk back home. I was only like a block away and get ready for Saturday Night Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
Holy shit. That fucking kicks ass. That's the kind of shit I like to hear, man.
Yeah. But before that, I was all about Svengoolie. And And then later on, like after I outgrew SNCC or it stopped being a thing or whatever, he kept going. And so it's like, fuck, like he's still around and still doing his thing. And it's so cool.
Yes, Sven Gulli, he's still around. He's been around since the 70s and he's still going.
He's an actual reporter in Chicago for a local network. And when you see him outside of his makeup, you're like, what the fuck? I mean, he looks like a normal dork.
Yeah.
But your brain can't figure out what's happening. That's not right. He's missed, something's wrong here.
So Elvira hosted a show in L.A. called Elvira's Movie Macabre in the mid-1980s. The producers wanted to revamp the Vampira show, which goes back to the 50s.
54.
Yeah, she was the first show.
But basically, they hired her, and then she was kind of hard to work with, it sounds like, but she quit. And so they needed a new host and they found Cassandra Peterson.
She had just gotten married and she was actually out of Los Angeles. She was in Colorado where she spent a majority of her life. And one of her friends was calling her and say, I have a friend who's casting for the show. You need to get back to Los Angeles. And she's like, nah, I'm going to get there. And they're going to say, nah, we pick somebody else. I'm not going to do it. So she avoided them for 2 weeks. Finally, when she came back, she called them and say, hey, are you still interested? And they're like, yes, please come in now. She came in. There was the last day and there were still like, I don't know, let's say a dozen women dressed like a vampire sort of thing. But she came up in her just regular clothes because she wasn't that interested in it. And they saw her and they're like, yeah, you definitely need to be in this. And as far as the original Vampira, trying to say it politely, I think she was a drug addict who was on the downward swing of her life. And this is all based on Cassandra Peterson or Elvira's biography, so take that with a grain of salt. But she said that she had very few teeth left in her mouth and she was slurring. So they had a meeting with her, and apparently she did not like Cassandra Peterson. And the day that they were going to start shooting the first episode, they got a cease and desist from Vampire's lawyers saying, you no longer have permission to use my name. And so they said, okay, we're going to shoot anyway. We're just not going to use the name Vampira. Everybody in the cast, everybody, all the crew, they wrote names down, a piece of paper, threw it in a hat. They picked a name. The name was Elvira. And they stuck to that. That's how she got her name, Elvira.
There is a great interview where Myla Nurmi talks about what happened. And she is very clearly possibly fucked up on something. And very adamant that she walked in, there was something wrong with the contract, and she immediately turned and left. And it really doesn't make any sense.
You both called in, Cassandra and I, to sign our contracts.
Right.
And I took one look at her and spun on my heel and left.
So
I was appalled.
So this is a real ripoff.
Oh, total. Yeah, total. It's so my show completely.
So what are you going to do about it, Maya?
Well, I'm suing.
You are?
Yeah, I'm finally suing. I've been trying all these years, but I was unable to get an attorney because I had no money. But I finally have someone who's doing it on consignment. I don't have to pay her out front, and I finally found a nice lady.
Yeah. She's very difficult to work with. We could just say that.
She was friends with James Dean, though. Pretty interesting.
That's the other thing. In that meeting, Myla Nurmi kept referring to James Dean as if he was still alive and as if they were still dating. In that meeting. And so that's why she was saying, like, she wasn't sure she was all there.
I also wanted to note, I read that Elvira went on a date with Elvis.
She did. So she labels herself as a starfucker. And that's how she calls herself.
Wow.
I'm not saying I agree with it or not, but she understands.
Do not cancel Miguel.
Say again, Elvira, national treasure.
Yeah.
Exactly. She's amazing because she actually never lets herself be talked down to in her role. She whenever somebody like a dude is giving her shit or being sexist or whatever, she gives it back to him. She's never the butt of anybody's joke. Yeah. Like, yeah, I love that. Yeah.
That's the thing that's so awesome about her is she's like a fully sexual being who is completely in control. And that is not a character that you see women play very often.
So there was a bunch of stuff that she went through her life that I thought was fascinating. She feels like the horror Forrest Gump, like honestly. And I don't know if it's just because this is what happens when you're in Hollywood. You just mingle with celebrities, but the names she was dropping, you mentioned that she met Elvis. I don't know if it was a date, but she met him because she was a Las Vegas showgirl, and she was a teenage showgirl. She wasn't even legal when she was a showgirl.
Oh my God.
And after one night, after a show, Elvis's entourage invited her back to his hotel. He had a whole suite, whole top floor. And she said she had a deep conversation for hours. And afterwards, he told her to get out of Vegas before it basically swallowed her up and to never do drugs.
Holy shit.
Was like, that seemed a bit funny since like he was basically a drug addict.
Listen, honey, don't ever do drugs. Get out of Vegas.
So she was a teenage showgirl in Vegas. Before that, she was a go-go girl when she was like 13 years old. And she was like dancing in go-go clubs and staying out until like 2 a.m. working. So it's kind of crazy. She didn't have the best life coming up. But she spit in Frank Sinatra's hat because he was a complete dick to her.
Fuck yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, she was in a Bond movie. Background character. She met Vincent Price because he would come on to Movie Macabre to do guest spots because it was in a local Los Angeles area. And so they became friendly. And she started writing letters back and forth with Vincent Price. And some of those letters are now in the Smithsonian because they have a collection of Vincent Price's belongings.
Oh my God. Holy shit. That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's fucking incredible. That's
amazing.
Michael Jackson said that he loved her and that she should have done the voiceover in Thriller. In fact, the person who wrote the lyrics that Vincent Price actually says had her in mind for Thriller for that voice. Wow. But then they ended up going with Vincent Price.
That is huge.
If I can find her reading that, I will put that in right here.
I think that'd be amazing. I think world history would be different if Elvira did the Thriller video or the Thriller song instead of Vincent Price.
100%. 9/11 never would have happened, at least.
She was offered coke by Liza Minnelli, which she did not do at that point. But later on, she did get a bit addicted to cocaine, which she was able.
It was the 80s.
Yeah, exactly right. And she had sex with John Voight, Robert De Niro, Jimi Hendrix, and Tom Jones was her first.
Jesus Christ.
And it was actually a really bad experience. Yeah, like he was really rough and things happened that shouldn't have happened. I don't want to bring the podcast down, but she had a really, really terrible adolescence. She grew up in like the 60s, like in the Woodstock era, whatever. She would follow these bands around and she got, trigger warning here, she got sexually assaulted by Jimmy Page and Will Chamberlain, and along with some others. So like, I just feel really bad for her. She's a sexual assault survivor and she is grown from that and she's made so much out of her life. But in her book, she talks about how hard that was. So if you enjoy her at all, like I would seriously recommend reading that book because it was really fascinating. I want to give credit to that because she did an amazing job. I don't know if she had a co-writer or not, but she did a great job.
Does she read it?
She does read it. That's the best part.
Oh my God.
And
fuck
she,
yeah.
Even some of the jokes that were in this pilot ended up in her book, which I thought were amazing.
Yeah, you never want to let a good joke go to waste.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Thank you guys for making me watch this because Elvira was always on my periphery. I always knew of her and I've seen the movie before and I appreciated her, but now like I love Elvira.
That's kind of the thing, is she's kind of a peripheral character. And I think that might be a good place to go into just like, what is this show? Because I feel like Elvira is a very seasonal character. She's like Santa Claus or the leprechauns or groundhogs. You don't typically hear about Elvira in March.
Yeah.
She just kind of shows up in September through October and she's the queen of Halloween. And then she kind of goes away for a year. And I think one of the ways that she's managed to stay relevant is she's not around all the time. But this show was sort of an attempt to make Elvira a year-round character.
She actually credits herself as making Halloween as popular as it is today. Halloween didn't used to be this huge celebration and now it is. And I give her the credit as well for making Halloween as popular more than it was before.
100%.
So she was born in Kansas.
Right. Yeah. They started off in Kansas. And then what happened was they ended up flooding her valley where she was at because there was a big flood. So the Army Corps of Engineers flooded it and they had to move.
Whoa.
And they ended up moving to Colorado.
She also ended up with a huge burn on her body, which required skin grafts covered over 35% of her body. I'm reading this from Wikipedia, The God's Honest Truth. But resulting in her having to spend 3 months in a hospital. That's insane.
She almost died from it. The only reason why she lived was because an expert in skin grafts happened to be in Kansas, what? And they sent her to that hospital.
What?
And then also on top of that, a new experimental drug had just been released to be able to be used on public. And so they put her on that. Typically at that time, when you have more than 20% of your body burned, like third degree burns, you will die. And like you said, she had 30 to 35%. And so it was a miracle that she survived. And you can never tell because it's on her back. And then also she always brings her hair forward. Like you'll notice that the huge, ridiculous bouffant wig that she has, the black.
Incredible.
Her hair is always over her front shoulders to hide her scars. And my mother, she's Puerto Rican. She grew up on the island and they lived in a campo. The campo means like the country, mean no road, no indoor plumbing or anything like that. And she had 12 brothers and sisters. And so at like 4 years old, she was cooking for them because my grandparents were shit. And so she actually ended up tipping over like boiling water, like pan, and it fell on her face. And she has a ring around her face, but you can't tell because she always covers it with hair. And as she was saying this, I was like, wow, like I like connected with that because I know exactly what that looks like. And I know exactly what that feels like because my mother does the same thing.
Holy shit, man.
That's incredible. Look, you didn't have to burn your family for research for this podcast. Nobody asked you to do that.
I'm committed to this shit.
Fucking incredible.
This was made in 1993 after a long pre-production going back before the 1988 movie.
A network reached out to her in the mid to late 80s. They wanted her to do a TV show. But she was like, I need to do a movie first before I can do a TV show. Because back in those days, there was TV stars and there was movie stars. And you can go from TV to movie, but you would never go movie to TV. Now it's interchangeable. Like you'll see movie stars and Netflix shows or TV shows or whatever.
Yeah, Henry Cavill's in The Damn Witcher for Netflix.
Right, and that's Superman.
That's right. He kicks ass, by the way. He fucking rules.
He's not the weird guy who got caught. No, that's Armie Hammer, right? Who was like a cannibal.
Oh, yeah. Armie Hammer is the cannibal.
Okay, cool.
I want to eat you, baby. I want to cut your hands off and eat you.
And it never aired on TV. So we don't have any original commercials, unfortunately, to watch.
Yeah, there's also no music in it, which is very unsettling.
Yes. And I actually wondering if maybe it didn't get far enough in the production process for them to create a theme song for it. That's my only theory.
That's a good theory, yeah. I don't know.
But this was written by Cassandra Peterson and John Paragon. And he also plays the voice of my least favorite character in the show. Maybe my least favorite character we've talked about on this show. The sassy talking cat Renfield.
Bring back some kitty litter or you'll be sorry.
Oh, you didn't like him?
Oh, thank you so much because I
hate sassy animals.
Fucking awful. Sabrina the Teenage Witch totally ripped this off, like, exactly.
Yes.
And it's just as bad as this, which never aired.
There's a third writer, which we haven't talked about, Ann Beats, who I think she probably just came in and punched it up. That's my guess, because it seems like she has a lot of SNL movie credits and stuff, you know, where she's, like, the third writer.
Huh.
Most of her IMDb is pretty boring, but I did find Tarzoom Shame of the Jungle from 1975, which seemed pretty interesting.
Sounds good.
I'm going to read the IMDb. Shame, the ape man of the jungle, sets off to rescue his woman, June, when a gang of giant penises kidnaps her.
Excellent.
Oh. The entire thing is on YouTube.
It's a cartoon.
It's a cartoon.
Okay. Wow. She wrote that?
She wrote that.
Huh.
Everybody laugh at Shame if Shame not save June. But if Shame go save June, he gets shit kicked out of him.
But all debate is swept aside by the same primeval urge that rules both man and beast alike. Shame must find his mate. Nothing else matters.
Very weird. It looks very much like Fritz the Cat.
Yeah, but this is not Ralph Bakshi.
Yeah, it's not.
I guess we should get right into the YouTube video itself. So it's been on YouTube for 9 years. It was uploaded August 18th, 2013. It has 43,734 views, and that breaks down to about 82,000 views a year. So people are watching this show.
Yeah, I mean, I went on a dive of Elvira videos after watching this. So I can imagine the people that were already Elvira fans looking up Elvira on YouTube and stumbling on this, getting excited and putting it on.
All the comments are actually very positive.
It has a 7.9 out of 10 rating on IMDb. So
wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think she has a very loyal following.
Yeah.
It's all on the strength of her character.
Can I read my favorite comment, which is the top rated comment from the version that I watched? This is from Renato Benotto. Hey, Netflix, what you are waiting for?
Well, they definitely listened, right? Because they got they went out and did some more Movie Macabre. With or was it Shudder? Nope. I'm sorry. That was Shudder. I apologize.
She did something with Netflix.
Did she? Okay.
There was something that I thought I saw on Netflix.
Hello, darling. It's me, Dr. Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. Welcome to your first Netflix and Chills wellness session.
But the uploader is the Hauntbox. So we want to give him a shout out.
Thank you, Hauntbox.
He describes his YouTube channel as a place to find information on horror movies, Halloween's haunts, cosplays, conventions, and all other strange, unusual, and macabre things. He also claims to have been at the taping of the Elvira show, which is pretty cool. So go check out Hauntbox. He seems to only post around Halloween.
Oh, maybe he's a ghost cursed to only exist on this mortal plane in October.
He's a ghost in the machine.
He definitely looks very spooky.
Ghost in the box.
All right, so the first thing that happens, we see a pretty great Elvira show logo. It's in the sky. There's a crescent moon.
It's very Bewitched.
It's written in kind of elven Lord of the Rings type font, and there's a little bat for the tittle on the eye.
The tittle? I like
the
that.
Tittle? It's actually called the tittle.
Oh, I thought you were making an Elvira joke. I thought you were already in the swing of things based on the jokes in the show.
I have spread little tidbits throughout this show.
Did you say titty bits?
Keep your ears open. So we hear only crickets. This show does not have any kind of theme song. It really sucks.
It's very, very odd.
Yeah.
It has no theme song, but it does have what I assumed was a laugh track. It was filmed in front of a live studio audience, which we didn't get. Did we get the notice?
No, we weren't warned.
I used to love when they would get.
Yeah. Like on Coach in particular. I loved it on Coach.
Coach is filmed before a studio audience.
Exactly.
Because they would always have a different cast member say, Coach was filmed in front of a live studio audience.
Coach is filmed before a studio audience.
The sound guy told her that it was only like the second time in his career that he didn't have to add any canned laughter.
Wow.
Wow. Wow.
And you could hear it because there's some laughs that were not well timed that you could just tell some dude who was like, didn't get the joke or got the joke late or something like that. And also there's the 90s thing that I hated the most. There was one time when she was walking away from the camera and you got a shot of her her butt, and one dude was like and is like, that's not canned laughter.
In all those years of the Groundlings, I'm sure she could work at stage.
Oh, definitely. Yeah,
all we hear is crickets, and we pan down out of the sky onto a stucco arts and craft style house, I guess, and a sign that says psychic readings by Elvira. And we see her, Elvira, and she is billed as playing herself, which is excellent. I always love it when characters do this.
Yeah, like Pee-wee.
Yeah, and you kind of see why Pee-wee and Elvira are such good friends, because like they live the same life. They are playing this character and appearing as themselves and doing all this marketing stuff around this character. It seems like they would have a lot to talk about.
Let's see, Lorraine. What do the spirits have in store for you today?
So she is giving a psychic reading. She's got her crystal ball. There's a table with a tablecloth. It's the whole cliche deal. And she's giving this psychic reading to a woman. And this woman, Lorraine, is none other than the most beautiful woman in all of Puppet Land, Miss Yvonne.
Hi, Miss Yvonne.
Hi, Pee-wee. Hi, everyone.
I did not realize that.
You didn't?
I didn't realize that either.
Yeah, that's Lynn Stewart. Lynn Stewart always shows up in all of Elvira stuff. She shows up in all Pee-wee stuff. She shows up in all the John Paragon movie that I watched. She was in that.
Wow.
So they're all friends, which I think is really cool.
That's so fun. I love that.
She was also a groundling. It's a pretty hilarious scene. Elvira's trying to do a cold reading, and she's just failing miserably.
Do you know Bill?
No.
How about the Bob?
No.
Jack?
No. Mike? No. You don't know anybody named Mike? No.
I was like, you don't know anybody named Mike? Yeah. And I just thought her delivery was so funny. It's just so funny. You know, it's just a great delivery for that.
That was one of the jokes that just really got me.
And then she offers Lorraine a special on love potion.
Now, what you do, Miss Wiesner, is you drink this little bottle of love potion, then you get naked, and you dance around this little red candle like crazy until you work up a real good sweat.
This is when the first time we hear the cat talk.
Ew, not a pretty picture.
I hate that so much because I like everything he's done, but I hate his voice. Elvira never actually charged the credit card.
Do what now?
So she does the psychic reading and the lady passes her the credit card and she never actually charges it. She just stands there.
No, she puts it in an old school machine, doesn't she?
Did she? Okay, then I must have missed it.
Yeah, I remember because I was like, oh man, should I talk about the old school credit card machine?
Does it go cha-ching like one of those?
Yeah, you have to put it down with a piece of paper.
Carbon copy. Yeah.
Yeah, and it takes basically a trace of it. Wow, I can't believe I missed that. Okay. Yeah, I don't know why you guys invited me on this. I don't deserve it.
You were supposed to read the manual for the credit card machine before you got here. Lorraine leaves, and this is when we meet Aunt Minerva.
Played by Katherine Hellman. Mona.
Yes.
Fucking Mona.
Just off of 8 seasons of Who's the Boss.
I heard her voice and I was like, wait, wait, wait. No way.
Yeah.
I had to look it up. I was like, yes, that's her. Holy shit.
Our favorite kind of character on this podcast, horny old ladies.
Yeah.
Did I detect the possibility of some imminent bed bouncing?
We love a horny old lady here.
We love horny old ladies.
I'd like to co-sign that then.
She was also the mom in Brazil, which is an amazing movie.
Oh, yeah.
I gave Brazil a chance once, and I didn't know what the fuck I was watching. Is it Monty Python?
It's Terry Gilliam, who, he was from Monty Python, but yeah.
Okay, yeah. I was so confused by that movie. I don't know if I need to give it a second chance or if that's just what they were going for.
Yeah, that's what they were going for.
There's also there are two major cuts of the movie. There's one where they cut out half an hour or more. They call it the Love Conquers All cut. And generally people fucking hate it. I have not watched that cut. I've only watched the longer cut. I think it's pretty good. I think it's fun. It's interesting. De Niro is really cool in it.
I need to rewatch it because I was in my teens when I watched it. So
it's weird.
It's no Life of Brian. I'll give you that.
She's like the grandma and Who's the Boss, right?
Yeah, she's the grandma and Who's the Boss.
Yeah. So that's basically what her character is, except she's like a great aunt.
What the heck are you doing with that shopping cart?
Oh, don't worry, dear. I'll send it right back to the store.
But she can control grocery carts with her mind.
That's her power. Suckiest superhero ever.
Because this is when we learn that Elvira and Minerva are witches. And they are in hiding.
Minerva, what have I always told you about exposing yourself?
Oh, dear. Did I tuck my skirt into my pantyhose again?
No, I mean exposing your witchcraft.
Apparently, they have been moving around because people keep finding them out.
Oh, Elvira, I hate living in the closet.
Look, I don't like it any better than you do, but I'm sick and tired of pulling up stakes just to keep from getting burned at one.
Which, I mean, right off the bat, Elvira is not hiding very well. She's openly selling magic potions and doing psychic readings, and she's dressed like a witch.
She does say that she hates living in a closet, which is very prescient since she was living in a closet with her significant other for years.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, wow, that's interesting.
But they're not very powerful. Like, they can't really do big magic, I guess.
Or they're just afraid to do it.
No, she says like...
I mean, we can only do a few harmless parlor tricks, moving shopping carts, fixing parking meters, switching price codes.
You can switch price codes?
Of course. Look, I got this family-sized jar of chunky peanut butter for only 25 cents.
But we also learn that they are in Manhattan, not New York, but Kansas,
right.
Which also happens to be the birthplace of Cassandra Peterson.
Oh.
The joke that she makes here.
Manhattan, Kansas. The Little Apple. The city that always sleeps.
Those are jokes that she used in her book to describe Manhattan, Kansas.
Sounds about right.
I love a callback.
Yeah.
So then a hunky stud muffin shows up.
Hey there, pretty lady.
Renfield. Did we order a hunky stud muffin from the home shopping club?
Elvira becomes completely ridiculous.
So, you must be Elvira.
No, I must be dreaming.
One of the things I like about her character is she cannot handle herself around a hot dude. She completely loses it.
Well, it's great to see the roles reversed. Like in a society, we're so used to the man being the pursuer. Mm-hmm. And we see her being the pursuer using the same tactics that you would see a man doing. But because she's a woman or she's female presenting, it looks weird or it's funny or it's, you know, it's just goes against what the norm in society. And I just think it's like so something so great about her character.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a role reversal. And that's what makes it funny for sure.
You are?
Chip.
Oh, Chip. As in potato? Bet I can't eat just one.
And I'm just going to call him, I'm going to call him Potato Chip for the rest of this podcast.
He's a much better looking love interest than the guy in Mermaids.
Yes. He's a himbo. Like
he is.
Randy in Mermaids was just a slob.
I'm kissing a primal fantasy strand of my boyhood dreams.
An absolute disgrace. But, you know, Chip here, who will, spoiler alert, we're going to learn that he is a cop.
Oh, you suck.
He just looks like a stripper in its costume that rips away.
Chip, as in Chip and Dale.
Oh. She certainly has a type, right? Because even in Mistress of the Dark,
yes,
that dude could be like a stand-in for this dude.
Yeah, I noticed that they dress exactly the same. It's like denim shirt, jeans, tucked in. Super Jack.
She knows what she wants.
Yeah, why not?
Okay, you can have him. I had the insurance salesman.
So he's looking for a psychic.
Excuse me, but which one of you is a psychic?
I am.
And Elvira walks him into her fortune-telling room.
Walk this way.
And then she leans over her crystal ball and says,
Oh, Chip. I see big things in your future.
And it zooms down to her boobs, upside down in the crystal ball. She wrote this. This is what she wanted to do.
I love the humor. It's so cheesy. It's like a 50s like comedian from the Catskills.
Yes, yeah, borscht belt shit.
A regular Henny Youngman.
Yeah, but it's being delivered by this mid-30s valley girl. And it just works so well.
So at that moment, the doorbell rings.
Hold that thought, Chip. Right between your knees.
And Elvira sprints across the house to answer this. And this is when we meet Paige, who is played by Phoebe Augustine, who is Ronette Plasky from Twin Peaks. And Brienne told me that was fucked up. I've never watched a lot of Twin Peaks. Not my thing. Oh. But
I haven't seen it either.
You haven't, Joe?
Yeah, I've seen it. Is she in the show or is she just in the movie?
I think she's just in Fire Walk with Me.
Okay. It's been a long time since I've seen Fire Walk with Me, but I'm looking at the Twin Peaks fandom webpage for this.
Oh.
Yeah, looks like she was teen prostitute at the One-Eyed Jack brothel.
It's pretty unsettling after watching.
It really is. I mean, Twin Peaks Fire Walk with Me is very upsetting in a lot of ways.
I did not like Paige. I thought she vaguely looked like Paul Rubens, and that kept distracting me.
I had the exact same thought. I was like, she looks like Pee-wee. Is she his kid?
Yeah, I was. She, no, not at all.
What's funny was that it was between this actress and Hilary Swank.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, and she talks about not really following Hilary Swank's career afterwards, but she ran into her at a gym one day, and she was like, hey, Hilary, great to see you. Are you still working? She's like, oh, yeah. And she's like, oh, anything I might have seen? And she's like, well, yeah, I just won an Oscar.
God damn it.
She's like, I think it was, what, Boys in Cars or whatever that movie was.
Don't cry.
She was so embarrassed. And then she said a line that I thought could have been in this show or in the movie. She says, when it comes to casting, I sure know how not to pick them. She also almost cast Brad Pitt in the movie as one of the teenagers, but she went with somebody else. She ended up selling her house to Brad Pitt and then living next to him for 8 years. I mean, that's just, Hollywood is crazy, man.
Wow.
It is. If you've got money.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Oh, put me down for 2 boxes of chocolate mint and 1 vanilla cream. Thanks.
So Elvira mistakes Paige for a Girl Scout based on the weird school girl outfit she's wearing. But it turns out Paige is Elvira's niece that she was completely unaware of. But luckily, Aunt Minerva knows exactly who this girl is and gives us a very detailed backstory, which I'll just edit in right here.
But my brother never told me he had any kids.
He didn't know it himself. He died before she was born. Her mother disappeared a few years ago in a mysterious boating accident in the Bermuda Triangle. Poor dear Paige, she was raised by nuns on a remote island off the coast of Maine. Now she's come to stay with us.
Oh, that just explains everything.
One of the jokes that I liked here was she says, "Oh my, how you've grown."
But you've never seen me before.
Well, I'm assuming you used to be much smaller.
I assumed you were smaller.
Yeah.
I assumed you were smaller. Wonderful. Yes. I don't know if they really explain why she's there. I just kind of assumed she aged out of living there because she says she's 18.
It wasn't until I turned 18 that the sisters warned, told me about you.
And she's extremely sheltered, and she's very shocked by Elvira.
The sisters taught us not to dress in a way that could tempt men to sin.
She tells them all about how she's always wanted to live a normal life with a normal family.
Good luck.
And Elvira says,
"You can be June Cleaver, and Minerva can be Ward, and I'll be the Beaver."
Yeah, like, this is raunchy, even now, right? It's,
yeah. Yeah.
It's like PG raunchy.
It's a great joke and it's very clever. But some of the jokes here gets as raunchy or raunchier than Married with Children.
But it's not as mean spirited.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, Al Bundy is a complete shithead. But I just meant it when they're making sex jokes, you know. There's no ma'am in this one.
Tonight's broadcast of the masculine feminist has been commandeered by the secret society No Ma'am, National Organization of Men Against Amazonian Masterhood. Yeah!
Minerva and Elvira walk to the other end of the couch and face away from Paige and start talking about her, which is great sitcom logic. And they decide to try and figure out if Paige is also a witch. And Elvira is like,
"Okay, but remember, be subtle. Subtle is my middle name."
Minerva says to Paige, my favorite line in this whole show.
"So, Paige, when did you consummate your union with the incubus?"
I hear a lot of giggling for people who didn't enjoy the show that much.
Hey, hold on now.
There was a part where they talked about the Bermuda Triangle. Has it happened yet?
I might have brushed over it.
Okay, no worries. The reason I was just thinking, do you remember being kids growing up in the 80s? Or I don't know how old you are. I'm almost 40, so I grew up in the 80s. And like,
yeah, I'm also 40.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was terrified of a few things in the 80s. I was terrified of acid rain, quicksand, yep, and the Bermuda Triangle.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I thought that we were going to be having a fight for our lives as adults for these things. And literally none of those things, except for me, I actually did encounter quicksand once.
Really? Whoa.
Yes.
What?
I'll make a very long story even longer by saying that my wife and I went to Puerto Rico for our honeymoon. And I don't like going to resorts or anything like that. I want to go off the beaten path. I'm an idiot because of that, because shit like this happens. And so we went to this island off of Puerto Rico called Vieques. And Vieques used to be, their main was the army base that was on there. And then just a couple years before we went there in 2008, they were still using the beach to test bombs. And the people protested and the army base ended up leaving. So now they're trying to get people to come in, but the infrastructure wasn't there for tourism. But we went anyway, right? And so we got there and our hotel was absolutely terrible. Our rental car was, I believe, the owner's car. And it was dented everywhere. The driver's side mirror fell off while we were driving. I called the guy. He said, "Don't worry about it. Just keep going." Like, the brakes, like, it was rusted. The brakes were, like, bad. It was terrible. So, like, to force ourselves to, like, not be fucking depressed, right?
On vacation.
Yeah.
That's all I asked for.
We went to this black sand beach, and the only way to get to this black sand beach was by this path. You had to park off the side of this very small country road, not even a spot for your car, so we were worried about that. We were walking down to this black sand beach, and it wasn't the rainy season yet, but it had rained like maybe, a week before or whatever, or the day before. So there was this stream that led into the ocean, right? It was dried up. You can walk down this dried up stream, go over this hump, and you'll be at this black sand beach. We're like, oh, hell yeah, we're going to do that. We are out in the middle of nowhere. We do not know anybody here. I mean, I'm Puerto Rican. I have family on the other side of the island. But like we were out in the country. And so we're walking. And all of a sudden, I fall. Just one leg just goes straight down all the way to my hip. Shit. So like I'm split. And like, what the fuck? It's quicksand.
Whoa.
I'm like, what the fuck is happening here? And because I'm a stupid idiot, like I took these brand new gym shoes I just bought. Like I was not dressed for the beach. I don't know what I was thinking. Right. And so I was so pissed already. I was like, this cannot be happening. I couldn't dig myself out. My wife had to go get a stick.
You can't get mad at the quicksand. It just sucks you down.
Yeah. You gotta like be calm. And I was not calm.
You have to love this.
It took like 5 or 10 minutes to get me out of this stupid fucking quicksand. I was shoveling, like taking handfuls of sand, and then my wife got a branch and helped me like claw my way out. I had to reach back down to pull out my shoe because it got suctioned in. It was so fucking ridiculous. I'm like, my wife was like, let's just turn around. I'm like, no, we're almost fucking there. Let's just go. I walked maybe 10, 20 more yards and I fell in again.
Oh my God.
I fell in again. This time, not as far, only to my knees.
Oh my God.
But I was so fucking pissed. I got out. She's like, we're turning around. I'm like, no, I could see the black sand beach from here. So we finally made it to black sand and it was fine or whatever. But yes, so there is quicksand. You need to be fucking careful about that shit.
Holy fuck. Yeah. That's a harrowing tale.
Yeah, that really is.
It actually was. I can never get those shoes clean again. I only wore them one time.
If you'd like to buy Miguel a new pair of gym shoes, send a $100 Amazon gift card to pilotingerrorpodcast@gmail.com.
I'm sure it'll trickle down to me, trickle down to common economics. We're in the 80s.
Oh, yeah. We cut to the only other location we see in this whole show, other than the living room and the fortune telling room. We get a nice establishing shot of a very federal looking building. I actually took a screenshot and reverse image searched this. And this is actually the Fort Kansas Post Office, which is a nice touch of realism, I guess. I mean, they found a building in Kansas. It's 2 hours away from Manhattan, Kansas, but it is a building in Kansas. So good job, production team.
Yeah, not bad.
So we're in the Fort Scott, Kansas Post Office, which is doubling as the district attorney's office, I guess. And we briefly meet Maxine. She's showing potato chip into the office of the district attorney, Lindsay. And we only meet her for a few seconds.
Thank you, Maxine. That will be all.
Uh-huh. Cringe.
Yeah, she's like, you guys are definitely fucking. That's basically it. And then she's gone out of our lives forever.
They have the quote unquote sassy black girl who literally says,
exactly.
Like in every 90s stereotype.
The only person of color in this entire show. And it's just a stereotype and she's gone.
There's another cop in the background who actually arrests her at the very end of the show.
Oh.
But I don't think he has a line.
No, so. Doesn't count.
Yeah.
So it turns out Potato Chip is a cop, which that's the big reveal here. And the other thing about the scene is, why is Lindsay wearing a wig? She's wearing this like bizarre blonde wig, which does not look right at all.
Yes, the worst wig. It was giving very much like a Casey Becker from Scream wig. You guys don't get that reference because you're not horror people.
Nope. Not at all.
No. I've seen Scream. Is that a Drew Barrymore?
Drew Barrymore. Drew Barrymore. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You like scary movies?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, I know what you're talking about.
I understood what you meant, okay. I think.
All right.
For the most part.
I know enough from the culture to know what you're talking about, even though I've never seen the movie.
You've never seen Scream?
No.
I've even watched Scream, and I think I'm a bigger pussy than you are.
Maybe I watched it in the 90s at some point.
I'm like a little baby.
I kind of remember it.
It's a very fun movie.
It's a great movie. Wes Craven's a genius.
He is.
Isn't it? It just devolves into the girl running and her clothes being ripped off.
I think you may be thinking of Scary Movie, which is a satire.
Or I Know What You Did Last Summer or something like that. I just feel like, is it like Neve Campbell or somebody running?
Rose McGowan runs at some point, right?
In what movie?
In Scream.
I thought it was in Scream. It's just like,
she gets caught up in the top of the garage door.
Yes. She runs as much as someone can run in a garage.
As much as she can run in, what is it, 400 square feet of two-car garage?
That would be me running around the garage and saying, well, I worked out today. I ran across the garage.
Ooh, chip. As in potato? But I can't eat just one.
Well, I guess I don't have to ask if the wire worked.
Potato Chip went to Elvira's house, and he was wearing a wire. So somehow this is of interest to the district attorney to run a sting operation with a recording device.
What is the basis of this case? She says, like, she's selling fake love potions.
That love potion she sold Lorraine Wiesner put her in the hospital.
Like, I don't think that's a crime. You can sell snake oil all you want.
Yeah, I would. I don't know. Yeah, like, I was thinking scam, but...
She's poisoning people. That's what she says. Turns out she's not, spoiler alerts, but that's what she says. And I mean, you can't tell people something is something and then poison them. So I guess that's a crime, but I don't feel like you need this elaborate sting. I feel like you need like someone with a clipboard to come knock on her door.
Say, stop that.
Yeah, and do a little, you know, fill out some paperwork and then maybe.
They're not going to catch her for any of this shit. They're going to catch her for tax evasion. This is a RICO case.
This goes all the way to the top.
We have the documents down below the Pentagon.
District Attorney Lindsay is using her cop boyfriend to run investigations. This just seems wildly unethical.
Inappropriate, but also, what else is happening in Manhattan, Kansas?
Manhattan, Kansas. The Little Apple. The city that always sleeps.
That's true. I mean, what else would they be investigating? What does the DA do there?
And they don't even have an office for her. She has to, like, work out of the post office.
She has to work for that wig allowance that she gets, you know.
Her wig stipend.
Yeah.
They scheme for Potato Chip to go back to Elvira's tonight. And if she doesn't hear from Potato Chip by a certain time, she's going in after him. She is afraid he's going to fuck Elvira. And he definitely wants to.
Well, why wouldn't he want to fuck Elvira?
Lindsay's got good reason to be worried about that.
Your assignment was to nail her.
Believe me, there's nothing I'd rather do.
God damn it.
Yeah.
Some kind of joke?
More of a game, really. Can you handle that? Blondie.
All right, well, now it's time. Stop the podcast. Play a game. Joe, what do you got for us?
We're going to play a little game. It's called Horror Host Hotties. I totally had that name ready to go, and Miguel didn't just come up with it.
It was a merging of the minds.
We're mind melding over here.
If you can believe it, it took three people to come up with that name. So
it's called Around the World in 80 Maids. Mermaids, that is. All right, so you guys already know a lot of these, and we've kind of covered a few of them. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you guys a city. You're going to have to guess which horror host was based out of that city. Okay. If neither of you can get it based off the city, we'll go to a clue and move on from there.
We end in a tie. Is it like a fight to the death?
Yeah. I'm going to put you both into a big ring and give you those Klingon swords that they use.
So we're going to ring in with our names, right? I'll replace it with some kind of wacky buzzer sound.
Yeah, you can replace it with like a ghost going, ooh.
Perfect.
Or with me going, ooh.
Yeah, just do it two different ways.
Ah.
Perfect. Got it.
Got it in one.
Got it in one.
Also, you just made a, I believe it was a Star Wars or Star Trek reference,
yeah,
which I didn't get. So how does it feel, huh?
One or the other.
How does it feel?
Look, it feels pretty bad. Right. We're going to watch more horror movies now.
Yeah.
Question one. Los Angeles.
Ooh.
Go for it, Stuart.
The Vampira Show.
Correct.
I felt it was too easy. I was like, there's no way. There's no way. I thought you were trying to be tricky with it.
No, clearly, I've underestimated both of you.
I know about two, or maybe three, if you count Elvira, of the hundreds.
There is a website called Igor's Chamber of TV horror hosts, and there are legitimately hundreds. Like, it's organized but alphabetically.
Wow.
There are so many. I highly recommend igorschamber.com/TV horror hosts.
I love it.
Everyone should check that out. It's great. An amazing resource. So, Vampira, obviously credited with creating the genre of spooky TV horror hosts.
Really? She created it. She was the first one.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
So it ran from 54 to 55, and she attempted to revive it in 56 after it had failed.
Are you saying Vampira or Elvira?
Vampira.
Oh, Vampira. Okay, yeah, sure. Yeah. Here we go. I thought you said Elvira, and I was like, that's why I thought it was so easy. But okay.
No, oh, no, no. That would have been so, I thought about doing that just to be goofy.
My dad was right. I do have shit in my head.
My dad was right. I have shit for brains. I actually appeared in Play 9 from Outer Space as Vampira. She's, I believe, credited as Vampira. Yeah, they tried to have her bring the character back. But the way that she tells the story, she met Elvira at the contract signing, turned on her heel, and never looked back. We'll never really know what happened there, but she did eventually try to sue Elvira.
Yeah.
Which, that lawsuit was dismissed. Question two. Chicago. Miguel.
Now I got, damn it, I got cold feet. Fucking Sanguli. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, see, okay, I did not know that you were from Chicago.
Okay.
I had no fucking idea. So I definitely wouldn't have included him in this. But he is very interesting to me. I mean, I've watched a couple of little anime documentaries about him when researching this game.
Vampira and Elvira are most known, and he would be like the second most known horror host.
Well, and he would also be the second Svengoolie. Jerry Bishop was the original Svengoolie. And when Rich Koz, yeah, is the guy that plays him now, he started out as a fan and then became a writer for the show. And for a while, they billed him as son of Svengoolie. But in like 95, Jerry Bishop told him he could just go by Svengoolie. It's very fun.
It's a nice guy.
All right. Question number three. New York and Pennsylvania.
Oh, man.
New York and Pennsylvania.
I don't know of any other horror hosts, honestly.
Yeah. I got nothing. You said there was a hint.
Yeah. Give me, right? A hint.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, let's move to the head.
Rhymes with.
All right, so he was nicknamed the Cool Ghoul by none other than America's teenager, Dick Clark, and he worked in regional television until the 90s on a program called Shock Theater. And in addition to hosting TV programs, he also recorded novelty songs and had a hit with a song called Dinner with Drac.
Oh, fuck, I have this song, too, in my playlist. It's not... Oh, no, I...
Son of Drac?
No.
That's a Harry Nilsson. It's a movie.
And it's a dude's name. It's like a regular name.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah,
not like... Yeah, I would have to cheat and Google it. I don't know the name.
His name was Zachary.
Zachary.
Zachary, yes. He was in a Fright Night.
Fright Night. He is just a very interesting guy and like a true artist. His whole bit was just being over the top. He had a cast of characters, including his wife, who he called My Dear, who was recumbent in a coffin with a stake in her heart.
Oh.
His son, Gaspar, which was a series of moans from a potato bag suspended from the ceiling. And a large blob of gelatin tied up in cheesecloth called Thelma, which was a high-strung amoeba who cheated at checkers and responded to the command, heal!
Oh my god. I think you just broke my brain.
Yeah, Zachary. Just, like, so interesting. So strange.
That is so
bizarre. You know what's funny is Dinner with Drac is a pretty good song. Not a banger, but it's a bop. Doesn't make it to banger status, but it reminds me of Werewolf Bar Mitzvah.
Oh, shit.
Oh.
Have you guys ever heard Werewolf Bar Mitzvah?
From 30 Rock.
Yeah, from 30 Rock, yeah. Let's get a drop of that in here.
Tomorrow you will stand at the Bema and pray, but tonight let's gaze at the moon and bay. Werewolf Bar Mitzvah, spooky, scary. Boys becoming men, men becoming wolf.
Werewolf Bar Mitzvah, spooky, scary. Boys becoming men, men becoming wolves.
It's a great song.
It's fantastic.
Why don't you give us the name and we'll guess the city? Because I could guess cities easier than I could come up with these names.
Yeah, give us the name and then give us like three cities to choose from.
Yeah.
This one is so easy. Or maybe it's just easy to me. All right. Morgus the Magnificent.
I have never heard of that name. I've never heard of
that. All right.
Ooh. Oh, shit.
To say Seattle.
No.
No?
Okay. Here's your choices. I'll give you multiple choice, Miguel.
Sorry.
Fucking Stewart jumping the gun.
Eliminated.
All right. Is it A, Miami, B, New Orleans, or C, Indianapolis?
Indiana is a horrible place. So I don't want to even say that name. So it's going to be New Orleans or what was the other one?
Miami.
You kind of paused there, like you had to think about it. Which makes me lazy to believe that it's not Miami. Because if it was Miami right away, you'd be like, yeah, Miami. So now I have to deduce what I know about you, Joe. So are you the type of person to put the right answer in the middle or at the end? Can I get some quotes from Princess Bride in here?
My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
I'm gonna go with New Orleans.
You fucking nailed it, man.
Yes.
You nailed it.
Wow.
I'm in your head, bro. You didn't even know it. I'm in your head.
This is a guy who I have been watching clips of. I did not grow up in New Orleans, but a friend of the show, former guest on the Action Family episode, Dominic, he grew up in New Orleans and he grew up watching Morgus the Magnificent. His whole bit was that he was a mad scientist and he would do a different science experiment for every episode. He has his faithful sidekick, Chopsley, who is basically looks like an executioner wrapped in potato sacks, an animated wisecracking skull called Eric. Apparently, he kept his identity secret from everybody, including his children, for almost 60 years. It's kind of wild.
His kids didn't know?
Yeah, he didn't even tell his children until, like, I'm not sure when, but he definitely didn't tell them when they were kids.
Yeah, where did they think he was?
Yeah, who knows, man?
I gotta go to work.
Everybody should go out and go on YouTube and watch some Morgus the Magnificent. It's so cheesy, but as far as these go, it's probably my second favorite horror host bit, and it's just so fun. He's just so, so fun.
I'm looking at it right now. He looks like wild-eyed scientist with, like, bushy hair. He's got giant yellow teeth. He is mixing together. I don't think he's using these beakers properly. If I remember from Breaking Bad, you're supposed to heat things in that, not fill it. But
holy shit, yeah. He looks like Mr. Hyde.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, for this last one, I'm going to give you the name and then I'll give you the three cities. I'll just do it normal style. Well, I guess actually, you know what? It's not even going to be cities. It's going to have to be states.
Okay.
Goulardi. Goulardi.
The password is Goulart.
Is he from Ohio? Is he from Washington? Or is he from Arkansas?
Ooh.
Go ahead, Stuart.
I guess Ohio.
You have nailed it.
Woo! I got one. Nice.
Good answer, good answer, good answer. The winner is Miguel. You won the game.
I was going to say nothing cool ever happens in Arkansas. So, like, there's no way that.
Oh, wow.
Oh, man.
Big you're
going to break Stuart's little heart.
You're not even pronouncing it correctly. It's Arkansas. We already dealt with this with Kansas. So.
Wow. No. I'm not going to have this debate.
Damn it. I probably shouldn't be fighting with the editor of the podcast who's going to be able to cut all my lines. Guys, I just want you to know I was way funnier than what you're hearing right now, but Stuart cut out like 50% of my material.
That's right. And there's nothing that Miguel can do about it. So Goulardi is definitely the most interesting of all. He dressed with like an obviously fake beatnik goatee and in kind of hipster garb. He would wear a bunch of like political pins. He was a big time left winger. He'd wear like LBJ pins and all this stuff. He was originally a voiceover announcer and comedian in Ohio, and they convinced him to be the host of Shock Theater. There were a lot of Shock Theaters, apparently. Every city had a show called Shock Theater. But the most important thing about him, he was insanely influential. Kids would dress up as him for Halloween, and the Cleveland police said crime actually dropped the nights that he was on.
Wow.
So his audience were criminals?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're all criminals. We're getting him out of here. He is Paul Thomas Anderson's father.
What?
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah, this is a quote from him. He dismissed his dad's claims of his fame, and he told him, "You're my dad. You're just a knucklehead. You were never any big deal." But then he went to Ohio with his dad, and people kept recognizing him on the street and asking for his autograph and everyone. He said, wow, he's not full of shit. He was this huge thing. He also became the voice of ABC in the 80s and 90s.
Wow.
He did voiceover for The Love Boat. We'll have to find that because my voiceover sucks.
Saturday, The Love Boat just might sink.
As well as America's Funniest Home Video.
Oh, sweet. So he was the guy going, uh-oh.
Yeah, yeah. That's right, Bob.
Oh, well, he's got his foot stuck in the toilet again.
Ooh, looks like that guy hurt his friggin' nuts.
Oh, wow.
Salute to boneheads. We'll be right back after these messages.
He is...
Yeah, really, really impressive.
So his son is Paul Thomas Anderson, the director of all those Haim music videos?
Yeah. <Okay. laughs> He's the guy that's so obsessed with Haim that he directed their music videos for them.
Okay, cool. That's the only thing I know him for.
So I'm looking at his Wikipedia here, and I feel like I need to mention that Pere Ubu.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Which is a really sweet, awesome band.
Yeah, Pere Ubu, one of the best bands of all time.
Yes. They mention him as an influence, and so does Devo. Because Devo are straight out of Akron, Ohio.
Oh, right.
The Dead Boys.
We're going to have the Cleveland Rock song.
Apparently, Drew Carey would wear a Goulardi shirt on the Drew Carey Show. Every once in a while.
The Drew Carey Show?
Yeah.
Every time someone says the Drew Carey Show, we have to use the interstitial.
That's come up more than once on this show.
Yeah, it's...
I haven't thought about the Drew Carey Show's since like 1997.
Yes.
I mean, he was really mean to Mimi.
But she was also really mean to him.
She sure was.
Real quick, I don't know if you guys know who he is, but real Bob Briggs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's a horror host. He was on TBS, so he was nationally syndicated.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, like my thing with him is he's very knowledgeable and he plays some great movies. But I don't know if it's a shtick or not, because I've never seen him in person. I've only seen him like when he's doing the character.
I think that's just him.
Yeah.
Is it really a character?
So maybe it's him doing him and not doing a bit. But like, I don't like that Texas good old boy thing. I've never liked it.
It drives me crazy.
Yeah. It drives me crazy. And
it's fucking awful.
Yeah.
And there's people who adore that and love him. And I'm glad for you. I'm glad that you like it. But I don't like that. And in this day and age, he has Darcy the Mail Girl, which she's actually like really, really knowledgeable with horror movies. She's in the horror community. People love her, but he still makes boomer jokes about her body and stuff like that. And it's like, dude, come on. You look like a creepy old man. You didn't age very well. We've moved past making joking comments about women's bodies. I mean, like Elvira did it in her movies, and because she wasn't the butt of the joke. She was making the joke.
She was in control.
Right, she was in control.
100% in control.
Yeah. And so I wanted to talk about him for a minute, because at this point, right now, he is the biggest horror host, because he has the deal with Shudder, where he's probably got like 5 seasons right now. And every time he has an episode or whatever, he trends on Twitter. So he's huge in the horror community and like in general. So he's the biggest horror host that we have right now.
Interesting.
Yeah, I remember 6-7 years ago, I was listening to a Last Podcast on the Left, and they had him on when they had just announced that they were going to be rebooting his show for Shudder. And One of the first things out of his mouth was, the first thing you need to know about my show is that there are no safe spaces. And it's like, oh, Jesus Christ, shut the fuck up. What a fucking boring way to think about anything. God damn, it drives me insane.
Yeah, and within the last couple years during the Trump administration, he said something like kind of like in support of Trump or stuff related to right-wing stuff. And I was like, okay, I don't need to give you any space.
I feel like when you say something like, there's no safe space here, it's like, you're not allowed to be offended by anything I say. Well, I'm not writing you a like that kind of a blank check, buddy.
Yeah.
You know, like
I have crafted for myself a very nice corner of the horror community. I've only followed people who aren't shitheads and stuff like that. And so I don't really see a lot of the nasty stuff, like people being racist and stuff like that. You know, growing up in the 80s and the 90s, there weren't a lot of people of color in horror movies. And now that's changing. We're seeing more and more and more. And so we're seeing more representation, which is always great to see. But he feels like the last vestiges of that old generation. And I just wish he would just move on. Like Elvira had a very short-lived 4-episode reality series called The Search for the New Elvira or something like that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and I feel like maybe we could just do that with him and then just give him a nice retirement package and like just move on.
The new Joe Bob Briggs. Yeah. And the winner has to kill him. Like an epic murder.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then they have to raid it, you know.
Jesus Christ.
And then they have to raid it.
Well, we got one stone and one big pile of brains.
Let's chat about you, Miguel. Let's talk about your podcast. Let's promote some of your stuff.
Yeah, let's talk My Horror Confessional.
Thank you for asking about it. So My Horror Confessional is a show that I started about a year ago. In fact, we just, within the last month, had our 1-year anniversary. And what I do is I have a person come on and talk about one classic horror movie that they haven't seen and why. And just like how you guys do kind of scene by scene with the pilots, we go like that with the movies, and we talk about the movie, the characters, the directors, all that sort of stuff, and just have a fun time. And it has to be a classic movie, so it has to be at least a minimum 20 years old, because I am 80s horror movie head, and so I like newer movies, but I feel like there's a lot of podcasts that talk about newer movies. And I want to talk about classic horror movies, the shit that I grew up on, the stuff in the 70s, black and white movies. I've done silent films, you know, all that sort of stuff.
I do really appreciate that you go scene by scene. Like, obviously, that's a style that I like. But when you haven't seen the movie, it isn't as much fun to listen to the podcast because they're talking about stuff that you didn't see.
Yeah.
So, like, I really appreciate, because it was almost as if I was watching the movie because you were describing it along what was happening.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I know it leads to longer episodes.
But who cares?
Right. Like, so I like longer episodes, you know? And it just leads to a better conversation, because there could be small detail that will lead to 10-minute conversation about something. We've done it in this episode today, you know, and that's what I like, because I like having a long form discussion with my guests so I can get to know them and get to know like what they liked or disliked about the movie. And we just have fun and talk about classic horror movies. And for my season 2, I had my friend Anthony Jerome M on, who was not my friend before. We were familiar with each other, and we like another podcast. And I had him on the show. And in the process of the show, it came up that he hated the 70s, the decade, the music, the movies, everything. He just hated it. He's younger than I am. And so he didn't grow up like that era of movies. And so I said, okay, I got to stop my season now. And I started season 2 with him. And we did, instead of My Horror Confessional, we did My 70s Confessional.
Oh.
And I did 10 episodes, one movie a year, so 70, 71, 72, and so on and so forth. And the majority of movies he hadn't seen. And through that process, we became really, really good friends. And so that's what I love, is like you grow closer to somebody by having this conversation. And it's just something I enjoy, because horror for me was always a very solitary endeavor. My oldest brother, he liked horror movies, but he was almost 10 years older than me. And so he instilled in me the love for horror. But by the time I was really able to see movies, he was almost out of the house. Like, I would be sneaking movies when I was like 3 or 4 years old, looking behind him and his friends as they're watching these movies in a dark basement, you know. But he moved out. Nobody else in my family and none of my friends really liked horror movies. And so it was very solitary for me. And even as I aged and I got older, I never really had a clique or a crew of people who liked horror. And so I created this podcast to be able to have an avenue in which to discuss my passion for horror. And throughout that, I've gained a lot of friends, and it's been very fruitful. And I have a small community that's grown. We have a Patreon now, and for the first, well, we were talking about this a little off mic, and you guys won't hear that. But speaking of politics very lightly, when my Patreon started was when Roe v. Wade was turned down. And so my wife and I were very bummed about that, and we were looking for a way to give back. And so we have been donating for the last 4 months, and we'll continue to do it for the next 2 months, all of our pledges from the Patreon to organizations that are leading the fight and getting women the healthcare that they need, because abortion is a right for women, and it's about healthcare. Yep. And so
100% abortion is healthcare.
Yeah.
And so we've been donating that money to charities. So for example, we did Planned Parenthood. We did Bridget's Alliance. We did the ACLU, and the community that has sprung up around my podcast has been one of the best things about starting this horror podcast. And I'm really thankful for them to be able to donate the money to these worthy causes.
That's fantastic.
We'll have a link to that in our show notes.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. We'll tweet that out as well. Or yeah. Retweet you. I assume you've tweeted it.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you
heard of this thing called Twitter? Have you heard of
Twitter?
Vaguely. Twitter is actually my number one social media. So I'm on Twitter at HCPod or Miguel_Myers_ATX. I don't remember exactly. Well, I have both of them. But for Instagram, I'm at Horror Confessional. And I will update it maybe once a month, if that. Like, Twitter is the best way to follow me, because that's where I've chosen to set up my house.
It's the only one that I use as well.
And I'm on Instagram.
Yeah, Stu's on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. Everything that I say on Twitter is fully endorsed by Stuart.
Yeah, just whatever Joe says.
You just remember, Chippy, I'm going to be listening to everything that goes on tonight. And if you're not out of there by 10 o'clock, I'm sending in the SWAT team.
We've got a show we have to conclude.
Oh, my God.
I don't think you guys want to finish it, but certainly we'll stick to your format.
No, we're having too much fun. Who would want this to end?
So the last half of the show is when things go really off the rails, which is what you want out of a show like this. There's a really funny moment right at the beginning where Elvira is sweeping and she asks the carpet to open up and say, ah.
Come on, carpet, say ah.
And then she sweeps under the carpet. I thought that was pretty good.
Same. It was giving like Looney Tunes. I actually did this for the first time in my life a couple months ago. We got an Airbnb. It was actually in Denver, like I was talking about earlier. And we were in a cabin, and they gave us a broom, but no dustpan. And so my mother-in-law was sweeping, and she's like, where's the dustpan? And I was like, I don't know, but I lifted up the rug, and I'm like, just do it. And she did it, and we just put it down, and then we just walked away. I'm in the Looney Tunes cartoon right now.
That is fucking amazing. You swept it under the rug.
Yeah.
God bless.
So Elvira wants Minerva to take Paige out of the house because Potato Chip is coming over and she wants to fuck him.
I've got a date with Chip tonight, and I plan on getting rug burns on every square inch of my body.
And then we get the shot where Elvira is lying astride a couch.
In her show, that's how she starts. She's always laying on the couch.
Yeah.
And as well as in the beginning of the movie, Mistress of the Dark, she's laying on the couch. That's kind of like her signature move.
Okay, so Elvira is doing her signature move on this couch, which in fact is the Friends couch.
Yeah, 100%. That's the same couch.
So this show was filmed not too long before the Friends pilot, less than a year. The set directors have said they found the Friends couch in a Warner Brothers prop house. So it's the right place at the right time. And also, shout out to Reddit user The Hypo for some detective work. They were able to match up tears the set director described on the friend's couch with one you can see in the Elvira pilot. So I'm going to say it's not only plausible it's the friend's couch, it would be weird if it's not the friend's couch.
You can look at the tufting, you can look at the fringe at the bottom. It's the same couch.
It's amazing.
That is pretty crazy. Although I don't know why it looks uglier in here than it does in Friends. Or maybe I'm too busy looking at Jennifer Aniston when I'm watching Friends. I don't know. Either way.
It's all in the lighting.
Oh, yeah. You know, she had another famous couch, the one that she had on her show, Movie Macabre. And at the end of the run of the original show, she asked if she could just purchase the couch. And come to find out that they had been renting the couch and paying something like $500 a month. So by the time that the show ended, they probably paid like $20,000 for the couch. And she bought it for like $200.
Jesus.
And she still has the couch as like a memento of her career.
That's incredible.
That is incredible. Yeah.
It's like how supposedly Jeff Goldblum still drives the Mercedes SUV that they gave him when he was filming Jurassic Park.
Really?
Yeah. He says that it's still like his only car. This was a few years ago, but that's pretty impressive.
I can see that.
He must not have to drive that much. I mean, come on.
Well, I'm sure he lives in New York City, right?
I have no idea. Listeners, if you know where Jeff Goldblum lives,
send us a Twitter message.
What is it? At Piloting Air. Or the email is
pilotingairpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can just call me at
area code 737-239-1983. That's area code 737-239-1983. Area code 737-239-1983.
So Potato Chip shows up and Elvira is flirting with him, but he just insists he needs the love potion.
Why would a handsome stud like you need a love potion?
Well, sometimes I have, a problem.
Oh. Problem. Oh, that kind of problem. Oh, well, I think we could fix that with a little physical therapy.
That would be great, but how about the love potion first?
So Elvira goes and mixes some of the potion up. He implied he has erectile dysfunction, so Elvira adds some starch to the potion.
Yeah, I wonder if this is going to be strong enough. I don't know how big his problem is. Add a little extra starch.
I didn't get that, but that's pretty funny. Yeah.
Oh, wait. No, I totally just got it. God damn it.
She wants to stiffen him up.
Yeah. Like, that's great.
I mean, because we're talking about boners right now, were we ever going to talk about the director of the show? Peter Boners?
Peter Boners?
I missed that.
I'm sure it's pronounced Boners, but there's no way I'm pronouncing it like that. It's Peter Boners. B-O-N-E-R-Z. The director of the Elvira show.
Is this a pseudonym for somebody?
I looked it up and he seems like a real person who directed.
Nope, that looks like a Peter Boners.
And that's a Peter Boners.
He directed some Bob Newhart show.
Yeah, he goes back. Like, he did by far the quintessential Police Academy. Police Academy 6. Everybody knows it's the best Police Academy.
Oh, shit. Is that the one where Hightower fights the alligator?
I don't know.
Or is that 5? It's one of the two. It's when they go to Miami.
I think the Miami's in the title of that one. But regardless, he did do Police Academy 6, City Under Siege. So definitely. Peter Boners directed the Elvira show.
She probably picked him just because of that. His name.
I wouldn't blame her. I would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
He's got the resume. Elvira tries to convince Potato Chip to drink the potion so they can fuck. And Potato Chip just wants to take it to go.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to take it to go, you see, I have a date.
A date? Chip, no. Let me see your hand. Oh, no, Chip. She's all wrong for you. I mean, she's all sweaty and wrinkled and calloused. Take my advice. Drop her. Drop her like a hot potato, Chip.
And she had, like, poured it into, like, a goblet. And it's smoking and it's fizzing. They end up struggling because she just wants him to drink it. So they're in this struggle.
Give me that.
No.
Give me that.
Potato Chip ends up being thrown up against a wall, and Elvira spills the potion on him, and he smokes and groans, and Elvira does a scream mug at the camera. And we cut to commercial.
another one of those. It's like that didn't seem necessary. It seemed like they didn't know how to end the scene.
I have to disagree with you. I feel like that's exactly how this scene needed to end.
Okay, all right, I'll allow it. But they did it earlier in the episode when the niece first got here.
I'm your niece, Minerva!
And she was like, Minerva, whatever the aunt's name was. And it's like, it seemed a bit like, I don't know, like formulaic or playing into the type of a show that you're going for. But everything else wasn't going into that. And so I don't know, I just didn't like that part about it.
Yeah. Well,
it seemed cheap. It was cheap to me.
You know what? Like, Elvira is pretty campy. It seems like right on brand.
Stuart, are we fighting right now?
is this the beginning of a beef? Are we getting podcast beef?
Yeah, I got so many beefs. I don't need another one. I don't need another one.
The potion has made Chiff completely stiff.
Did you say Chiff?
Yeah.
He's Chiff.
Nice.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Let me try it one more time. The potion has made Potato Chip completely stiff.
The Potato Chip?
I like made Potato Chiff completely stiff.
The Potato Chip made completely stiff.
Chip's body is completely stiff, and he falls over onto the couch, and the cat yells,
Timber!
Boo.
Awful. It's so bad. And his badge falls onto the floor, and Elvira realizes he's a cop.
What am I going to do with a big, stiff cop?
God damn it.
I found this really disturbing. This mannequin thing that they used for him, it was too real. How is he keeping himself stiff like that?
They gave him a real potion.
She puts him across the couch, like across a chair and the end of the couch, and then puts like a golden blanket over him for some reason.
Yeah, like she's doing a magic trick. A maggot trick?
Yeah, a maggot trick.
Hi, you're Beckerly. Of cakes, Aunt Minerva won them all. It was incredible.
This is when Minerva and Paige walk in, loaded down with cakes.
They're caked up.
They're each carrying like three cakes. All Paige says is they went somewhere and Minerva won all these cakes. So I guess they were at a cakewalk or something. I don't know.
What are they going to do with all these cakes?
What are you going to do with all that cake?
So they're like setting the cakes on top of Chip's body like it's a table. And they're not even questioning this. And Paige has to go back to the car to get more cakes. And Elvira shows Minerva that it's not a table, but it's in fact Chip.
My love potion turned him stiff as a board.
Well, wasn't that the whole point?
He also says,
oh my goodness, you could get the chair for turning him into a table.
Which was very funny.
Yeah.
Minerva does a spell to try and fix things, but she just makes Potato Chip's body float up in the air.
Light as a feather, stiff as a board. Light as a feather, stiff as a board. Light as a feather, stiff as a board.
So Minerva and Elvira, they're like holding their hands up, pretending they're holding the table, I guess, above their heads for some reason. So Paige comes back in carrying another cake, and she seems confused, but also suspicious.
What are you doing? Oh, just a little redecorating.
Really? Here, Aunt Minerva. Devil's food, my favorite.
And she hands Minerva the cake, and Minerva drops her hands, revealing that she's not holding up anything. And Paige says,
how do you explain this? Oh, well, Paige, you know how I like to pick up men?
And she pulls the golden sheet off of Potato Chip. Like, just out of nowhere, she reveals that she knows they are witches.
I didn't want to believe it, but it's true. Both of you, you're witches.
Like a kid's mystery show or something. And Minerva does this amazing witch cackle. Which I really laughed at.
It's a very good witch cackle. Very accurate.
Yeah, that was so funny. I wasn't expecting it, but she did a really good witch cackle. It was like, got an actual guffaw from you.
So Paige declares she's leaving, which makes Renfield make a quip.
Well, break out the champagne and little frisky.
That's enough out of you, you nasty old cat.
Well, it turns out only witches can hear cats talk. So she must be a witch. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't want to be a witch. She wants to be, quote unquote, normal.
No, I'm not like you. I want to be normal, like everybody else. I hate being different.
But, you know, Minerva and Elvira care and want to help her all of a sudden.
I wouldn't be trying if I didn't really care.
And we do, dear. Very, very much.
So they all hug.
Yeah, it's funny.
But it also feels saccharine, forced. I guess you have to do it, though, because this is supposed to be like a network sitcom.
Yeah.
Attention! This is District Attorney Lindsay Olsen-Weinberg!
The district attorney, she starts demanding to come in.
Minerva, take Paige and sneak out the secret tunnel!
She pulls down a candlestick, and this tunnel opens up.
I always thought that when I grew up, I would have a house with a secret entrance, like in Webster.
Yes.
You know, it might still happen. I'll build it if I need to, you know?
I think you already have one. And you're just trying to throw us off.
I'm turning myself in. Into what?
And Elvira gives an amazing monologue.
Just remember, Paige, I'm not just doing this for you, but for our kind everywhere. And all the other freaks and misfits who dare to be different. Because if I have to live in a world where everybody is forced to be the same, well, they may as well just lock me away. Because I'll already be living in prison.
It's a bit counter to all we've heard from her about hiding witchcraft so far up to this point.
Yeah. Which I think if it had been allowed to go to series, they might have built out from that, which I think would have been really cool. Where she was like, you know what? I don't feel like we need to hide anymore. We should be able to live in plain sight, that sort of thing. But she was doing, while she was giving that speech, she was doing a very slow Elvis walk.
Really?
Yeah. It was kind of cool.
So then, out of nowhere, Paige starts doing a spell.
No! Oh my god. Amarsha Vedrash! Goti Amarono Inarashe!
And there's wind and lightning happening.
On Elvira! Kiss him! No, I never kiss a man who smokes.
And Elvira runs across the room and she kisses him and he comes to. I don't know if you actually ever see them really kissing. What's great is Potato Chip is blowing smoke. That took some planning to get smoke in his mouth. That's really nice. And this is the same moment when District Attorney Lindsay bursts in with the police and yells,
"This is a bust!"
No. This is a bust.
Showing her cleavage.
She highlighted that joke in the book as one of her favorite from the pilot.
It's pretty funny.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They handcuff Elvira and arrest her for putting Miss Yvonne in the hospital.
Here comes the most beautiful woman in Puppetland.
Well, at that moment, Miss Yvonne shows up with a man in tow.
Hi, boys and girls.
Miss Wiesner, I'm glad you're here. Now you can officially press charges against this woman for poisoning you.
But I wasn't poisoned. I got pneumonia from dancing around a candle naked.
But I can still arrest her for selling phony love potions.
The love potion worked. If I hadn't been hospitalized, I never would have met my fiancé, Dr. Marvin Zislis.
So one thing that I checked up on is, you know, in the beginning of the episode where she was like, do you know Bill, a Bob, a Jack, or a Mike? I took those names down because I wanted to see later on if the person she, her fiancé, what the name would be. And his name is actually Marvin.
Oh.
So I like that there was that continuity there.
You're making me like this pilot. It's not awful.
I think the actors in it are funny.
You got to remember that she's been doing this character for over a decade at this point, and she's been writing with the same writing partner. And so this character is highly developed, feels lived in. They're really hitting their cues. They know the jokes. They know their audience, that sort of thing. So it's not like this is the first time we're seeing Elvira, you know? So
yeah.
I just think it really was working for them.
Well, they let Elvira go and Potato Chip says,
Elvira, I'm real sorry about all this. No hard feelings?
I don't know. Maybe later.
We get one last scene where the three witches are sitting on the friend's couch talking about all the adventures they're going to have. And basically we get one last cackle from Minerva.
You're learning. Yeah, before you know it, we'll have you flying around here in a pointy hat and a pointy bra.
That's pretty much it.
There was one thing. The niece made them some tea.
Paige, this tea is delicious. What's in it?
Oh, just some things I found in the pantry.
Which things?
Yes, they were.
Which things?
Which things? That's pretty good. The last thing I want to mention is we get a little bit of the theme song, but it's immediately faded down. I think they probably did that because they were worried about like copyright.
Yeah.
I figured out that it's actually Do You Believe in Magic?
Do you believe in magic? In a young girl's heart, how the music can free.
Really? Okay.
I found two versions, actually. One had Do You Believe in Magic, and the other one had Elvira doing a rap song.
Oh, no.
He's a vampire bat, sucking on blood, it's flowing fast. Except I don't know if he should really be doing that. I mean, I hope he practices safe socks.
Most rap, everybody's happy, everybody groove.
Yeah, at the end of Mistress of the Dark, she's got her big Las Vegas showgirl number, and she does a rap during that. And I was in full cringe mode.
You became Crinky Krongmas?
Yes.
So Cassandra Peterson, she can do anything, but maybe not rap.
You know, I think she was going for the Blondie thing, and it just didn't work for her.
So that is the Elvira show. Mm. So what happened?
What happened?
From the trivia section on IMDb, if someone wants to read this.
Yeah, Miguel. Check it out.
TBS produced a pilot under the reign of President Jeff Sagansky, who made assurances that it would be picked up. Sagansky fell ill and was hospitalized just as the fall schedule was being finalized. So CBS flew in the head of their sports department, Howard Stringer, to finish programming the season. Because we all know that sports guys are known for their comedy chops, right?
That's right.
That's ridiculous. And then Stringer hated the show's blatant sexual innuendo. And when he remarked that he wasn't picking it up, several executives walked out of his meeting and one quit. The new sitcoms that Stringer opted to greenlight instead, Family Album and It Had to Be You, barely lasted a month on the air.
Good job.
Very smart.
And this is something that kind of plagued her career, especially like she would just get going, getting momentum, and then something would happen that would stop it. So there was Mistress of the Dark. So it debuted at like number 3 or 4 behind some like big blockbusters, but was gaining momentum week over week going into its third week. And then the fourth week, something happened where the head of the studio was arrested on fraud charges. And the theater chains across the United States were worried that they weren't going to be able to fulfill their budgets towards the marketing of the film. And so they pulled the movie.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then with the, like, for example, her campaign with Coors Light, they were making money hand over fist with her. It was the most successful marketing campaign that they'd ever had. Then they started getting complaints about billboards showing her, quote unquote, scantily clad. They got like 2 or 3 complaints. So then what they did is they retrofitted the billboards to cover her up and to be, so you don't see any cleavage. And they got even more complaints.
God.
So they ended up pulling back her campaign. And so like, it's like she, right when she was just on the precipice to go on to the next level, something got in her way to stop it. That's not to say that she never made it to the big time, because everybody knows who Elvira is, you know?
She's always on the periphery. Mm. She's definitely made a lot of money, at least.
I knew her because of the Coors Light commercials, because of MTV, because of The Simpsons, that sort of stuff. Like, I think 80s and 90s, she was always like around.
By the way, she's still going. She's like 71 and she still gets in that outfit and does it. It's insane.
Yeah, I wish I would have been able to see her at Not Scary Farm.
Not Scary Farms, yeah.
There's this clip where this interviewer is like, is there anything you would like to do?
Is there anything on the Elvira bucket list? Anything you haven't conquered yet?
Wow. God, I think I've done everything. Probably twice.
They're like showing like all this Elvira merch, like all these like statues and the books. She's like written all of these teen novels and stuff. I mean, she's a marketing genius. So I don't know. I feel like Elvira did okay for herself. She didn't need this. If I were going to fix this pilot, I would say I want to see Elvira trying to do like normal things. I want to see, just like in the movie where she loses her job being a whore host, now she has to go work in an office or she has to go be a short order cook.
A fish out of water sort of thing, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, like she has to go to a temp agency and it's Elvira in a different situation. Just being herself. I don't think she needs all this other stuff. I think all we need is Elvira and she's enough. And you just put her in normal, boring situations and just let her go and comedy will ensue. It just writes itself. We've got an office set for the week. Write a script. Elvira has to work in an office.
Yeah, I agree. I'd like to see that she was pursuing the dude, but for that to be the main thrust of the story felt kind of like repetitive. And at one point I'm like, all right, come on, can we just move on? Like, also, there was no B story, was there?
No, I don't think so.
Right, yeah. So, and I think maybe being with them too much, like, not Elvira, because I don't think we really get tired of being with Elvira.
No, we don't.
But like the peripheral characters and all that, it's like, I don't know, it felt a bit stage play-ish and not so much as a sitcom.
I would remove the child.
Yeah.
That
Paige?
Yeah.
Paige, sorry. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. It's just not a very interesting thing. And it's like how a lot of these start out, where it's like, oh, they're weird. And here's their normal relative. I mean, that's the monsters.
Adam's family.
And Adam's family. Not my favorite idea.
I would say I would probably remove the live studio audience. Oh. It's just dated.
Yeah.
Like, I've never...
This is 1993.
Yeah, it's of its time, I know. But like... For me, being told when to laugh isn't like my favorite thing. And it feels very manipulative to me. So it's not, if maybe we're redoing it at this point, maybe I'd not have a live studio audience. No laugh track.
Ah, but like you said, that they didn't have to sweeten it. That was real laughter. Yeah,
that's true. That's true. But it was also like there was real weird reactions.
Because the actor's performance is a lift when there's real studio audience.
Hey, I'm the executive here. I get to decide, and I say no studio audience.
So there's one last thing that we have to talk about. Cassandra Peterson believes that they used this pilot as a template for Sabrina the Teenage Witch, a show that I absolutely hate.
Bad show.
This is so not me.
Isn't Melissa Joan Hart like a hardcore right-wing conservative?
Yeah, she is.
Yeah, she's in that God's Not Dead.
I would rather stand with God and be judged by the world than stand with the world and be judged by God. I am not going to be afraid to say the name Jesus.
Fucking Christ.
But mostly she just does Hallmark movies. She's one of the most disappointing people ever.
Hey, I got wants and needs that a scratching post just can't fulfill.
The cat, definitely, 100%. The cat is the same as the annoying cat.
It even sounds like the guy that did the voice for Salem, Nick Bakay.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing. Cat's out of here. If we're ways to improve it, cat's gone.
Bye-bye.
Yes. No more cat.
See you later.
We find something else for John Paragon.
You're getting neutered to a permanent end.
You know what would have been cool? If they were able to bring her in and Sabrina the Teenage Witch in some way, have her be one of the aunts.
Yeah.
But then they would have had to admit maybe that there was a resemblance to her show and they weren't willing to do that, you know?
Sabrina is actually in the same universe as Bewitched.
Is it?
Based on just like one little piece of dialogue, if I remember correctly.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
That's very weird.
I know that Sabrina is part of the Archie universe as well.
Yes.
Yeah. And within the last decade, there's been relaunches of the Sabrina the Teenage Witch as a comic book. And it's a really dark horror comic. Oh, and then obviously there was the Netflix series, as you know. Yeah. And then there was the remake of Archie as a really dark horror comic. And it became Afterlife with Archie. And it was a zombie apocalypse comic book. Still good.
What? I don't know about that. I just know about horny Archie.
Yeah, no. The
with sexy Jughead.
Yeah, no. There was a comic that started, let's say, 2010 by my favorite comic book artist, Francesco Francovia. And they created this Afterlife with Archie horror comic. And it's a zombie apocalypse thing. And you see all the characters from Archie, like Jughead becomes a zombie, and it's great. It only went for like 12 episodes, but it's so good. There's one issue that involves the dog. I think the dog's name is Hot Dog.
Great dog name.
It will bring a tear to your eye.
I'm looking up Francesco Francovia now. This is fucking amazing.
Yeah, he does some amazing artwork. I used to collect posters, movie posters. I have literally dozens upon dozens of horror movie posters, and I started out collecting him, and I had to stop because he's so prolific. I had to move on to some other hobby because I couldn't afford it anymore. I will say that my wife, we sat down and watched this, and she didn't think she was going to like it because, you know, you get this idea of Elvira in your head, like this woman who's bouncing around boobily everywhere and stuff like that. But she ended up really, really enjoying it. And there's stuff for the horror fans as well, because it's kind of front-loaded in the beginning as just like a horror-themed comedy. But in the end, it gets really, like, a lot of horror elements, great special effects, stuff like that. So it's a really good movie. I had more fun than I thought
there,
it was going
to. Yeah, there's a practical effect in there that I'm not going to spoil anything, but holy shit, it was great. It was so much fun.
And I would say if they were able to get the spirit of the movie into the TV show, it would have been a better pilot. Who knows if they still would have been able to make it to series, because that guy just seemed to have it out for, but they missed the mark a bit. And I guess that happens because you have to water down a product, right? And it didn't hit the mark all the way. They missed some things. But overall, I enjoyed it. And I wish it would have made it to series. Will I watch this again? Probably not. But I've watched it like twice and it was fun.
It's okay. I guess just out of pure curiosity, if you want to watch. But none of these pilots, I don't think any of the pilots we watch on the show are ever worth watching at all.
No, there's a couple. Everyone should watch Look Well.
Everyone should watch Look Well. I guess if you want to write, watch Look Well. That's probably it.
Everyone should be forced at gunpoint at some point in their life to watch Knee High P.I.
No, that's terrible. But I would say, like you were saying with your wife, I'm watching Elvira, she wins you over. You make all these assumptions about her, and then when you get to know her, just like in the movie, she actually turns out to have a heart of gold and be awesome and a great role model.
Yeah, I guess it's really easy to just, hey, it's just going to be some dumb bimbo written by a group of guys in t-shirts that are stained up with spaghetti. But she writes it. She's fucking intelligent. She's funny as shit. The pilot sucks, though.
Yeah, the pilot's terrible.
I would give it a five out of 10.
You know, after talking with you and just like each little joke kind of making me laugh more and more, I think I'm right with you. I think I'm at a 5 out of 10.
It's not, like we said, it's not poorly written.
All right, Stuart, come on. We need you. We need you to come over. We need you to.
Yeah, we need it. Come on.
Are you at 5?
Come on, buddy.
I'll give it 5 out of 10.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely. 5 out of 10. 50%.
I just
Let
jumped.
Go!
It's halfway there.
I just jumped in the air and paused. So.
Yep, that's me. I bet you're wondering why I'm so excited. Stuart just gave Elvira the show. 5 out of 10.
He's like, it's a show.
I'm halfway there.